Welcome, welcome to a new episode of Pop. You may have noticed that this is neither Florence nor Cindy introducing the episode, and that's what really brings us together as a community, is that, you know, it doesn't rely on any one person to move the episodes forward or to have these types of engaging conversations. It could be done really by anyone, and I think that's the nature of presenting our presence, both in a deep metaphorical sense, but also in the sense of visiting that we're sharing today. Today's guest is Megan Tipler, and will be co-hosted by myself, Kyle Napier, and Dr. Cindy Gaudet. So, Megan, if you don't mind, just introducing yourself in a way that feels comfortable for you, and then we'll hear a little bit more about your story and your interests and what it is that you want to share about today.
Sounds good. I'm also just laughing because we were talking about aunties, and then I'm thinking about how aunties force you to do uncomfortable things. And here's Cindy that's just like, yeah, Kyle, do this. You can do the introduction for the first time ever. You got it. And you're just like, okay, I guess I'm doing it. But yeah, my name's Megan Tipler. I'm a Métis student and employee here at the university. My grandma was a Belcourt. She was born in Marlborough Métis settlement, and then both my maternal grandparents are also connected to Michelle Band, or descended from Michelle Band, and so that means like many Métis people in Alberta were connected to a lot of different places like Lac Saint Anne and Hinton area and places in and around there. So yeah, and my role at the university currently is Indigenous Strategies Manager in the Office of the Vice Provost, Indigenous Programming and Research. I'm still figuring out what that means. I had to travel a while ago when the border security agent was like, so what do you do? And I just said, policy stuff. And he's like, good enough, because that was the quickest answer I could come up with. I'm also a PhD student in secondary education, used to be a K-12 teacher, still really love teaching, but yeah, my path is taking me into academia, which I'm still trying to figure out if that's the path I'll stay on or not, but I'm here now.
And what a reflective path that is. Like, as you're saying, you're considering different journeys, you're considering different avenues of education. It's really hard to pin down that work that either you do in policy or what could be done outward. So I'm really curious what it is about the University of Alberta that has you feeling like this is the community for you. What brings out that sense of community in your own let's say wanderings and journeyings across campus or campus far and wide?
Oh man, I'm gonna be really honest in saying when I came back as a master's student, I probably didn't think about any of that. I was just trying to navigate the idea of going back to school. I wasn't, you know, a superb undergraduate student. I worked full time most of my bachelor's degree, and it showed in my grades. And so I didn't even know if I would get in, if I would be academically admissible to a master's program. But I was fortunate enough to have some principals who supported that application, and something in my letter of intent must have caught Dwayne's eye, because I did everything wrong. I didn't contact a supervisor or advisor beforehand. I didn't look into the programs. I think I just Googled Master of Education, University of Alberta, and the secondary education one was like at the top of the search results. And I was like, yeah, secondary ed. Like I did secondary ed in my bachelor's. That's what I want. And so I just, that's what I applied to. And my application was all wrong. There's a really kind human named Rebecca Saul, who's the graduate administrator for secondary ed. And I think if she was not of a compassionate of a person as she is, I probably wouldn't have been accepted either, because she was so gentle in saying, you know, here's what you do need. Here's the here's what the corrections you need to make. It's okay. Just get it in by this date. It's like, you know, and so I'm really grateful for like all the ways that I've kind of just been pointed in this path, even when it didn't really make sense. I think coming into my master's, I had a lot of anger. I had just resigned from Edmonton Catholic Schools, and accepted a job with ATEP. And this is also right on the heels of, you know, the discoveries in Kamloops in 2021. And so the first couple semesters of my master's, I was just, yeah, I was really angry. And it ended up being like Indigenous scholars and Indigenous peers who really helped me make that shift in mentality. And also just like open up my eyes a little bit to the kind of possibilities that are out there, and not having to constantly be on the defensive or justifying and things like that. So I'm grateful because the Faculty of Ed has, I think, the highest number of Indigenous graduate students. And I don't know what the stats are for faculty, but I imagine that, you know, it's one of the higher ones on campus. And so there's that presence. And so, like, for me, the learning this time around was less about, you know, the course titles or things like that. It was like, who do I want to learn from? And so anytime there was a class offered by an Indigenous prof in the Faculty of Ed, I was trying to find a way to get into it, because I had never experienced that. I was 30 something years old and I'd never had an Indigenous instructor that I knew of in my educational experiences. So I think that was a pretty profound, you know, shift, is being around all those people. And like, that's kind of why I think I thought of the aunties a lot, because it's largely been Indigenous women who have been involved in those conversations and who have supported me and kind of, you know, cultivated those seeds of possibility within myself. But I also am grateful for the uncles. I don't want to throw them under the bus, but the aunties have just been, I think there's just more of them, so they outnumber. And so I think that they are responsible for some of that community that exists and bringing people in and making space. And so I've just attached myself to that and been blessed to do so.
Amazing. And I want to talk about these seeds of possibilities and how you channeled anger into both academia and art, and where that brings us to our discussion today around creating the ribbon skirts. Do you mind sharing just a bit about what that process was like? Do you mind sharing about the ribbon skirts themselves? I mean, yesterday you and I were visiting about this, but to someone who hasn't heard, what is going on here? What is the process like? What does this mean for you?
Oh my god, that was like three questions in one. Okay, so the first thing with the anger, I actually want to give a lot of credit to, I mean, it's a lot of people, but specifically Dr. Trudy Cardinal has like consistently reminded me that like anger is okay. You just don't want to live in that place all the time. Because it is sometimes a really powerful like catalyst, right, to move things forward in response to like our angers and passions and injustices, but I don't want to be angry all the time. And so I've had a lot of conversations with her about, you know, like finding ways to find joy in education. And part of that was like, you know, she said like, come help us at Amiskwichi, because her and Cindy have, you know, their aunties and Cookums Collective there. And so just having space to have those conversations has been generative. And then the ribbon skirts themselves, I'm gonna backtrack, because I think initially it started, and I want to give credit, in Cora Weber-Pilwax's class. She teaches a class on orality. And so the final assignment for that class was we had to do a creative expression of some sort, and it was amazing to see what people came up with. Like, there was all different, you know, expressions in all different formats. And one of my classmates, Jody Kootenay, who's a PhD student in Indigenous people's education, she had a skirt that she'd sewn with her sister, and it was like this beautiful skirt, and she was explaining, in her presentation, like, you know, the symbolism of the colors and the, you know, the images that are on the skirt. And she finished it and she said, and I want to, you know, I want to present this to somebody who's had an impact on me this semester. I'm going to give this to Megan. And I just started bawling. But so that was kind of like the initial incident with the ribbon skirt, I'll say. Obviously, you know, I knew what they were and I appreciated them, but I hadn't really thought about them a lot. And this is my first semester of my master's at this point. And then the next semester, I took a class with Rebecca Sock-Beeson on Indigenous knowledges and anti-racism. And there was a similar assignment at the end. And so I thought, you know, I want to reciprocate Jody's gesture in a way. And so who has been impactful for me? And so I made a skirt for another classmate, Summer Sharphead, and did this illustration alongside of it, kind of just showing everyone connected. Then there was 12 women wearing ribbon skirts and my grandma in the center. And yeah, and then I had a conversation with Rebecca afterwards about that illustration, and she said we had a really good conversation about gender diversity and not, you know, the kind of dangers of like monolithic representation. And so, you know, some feedback from her, that illustration went through some edits to be a little bit more representative of, you know, Two-Spirit folk, but also just people, gender non-conforming people, people who aren't comfortable wearing skirts. And trying to capture some of that nuance. Obviously, you're limited in an illustration, you can't capture everything, but at least attempting to. And so that was published in the Alberta Teachers Association magazine alongside a piece she'd written. And oh, and I forgot to say, that skirt for Summer, I didn't know how to sew at that point. And so I had reached out to an ATEP student, Kat Morin, and I texted her and I was like, hey, I have a sewing problem I'm hoping you can help me with. And she's like, sure, what's the problem? And I said, I don't know how to sew. And so she's like, oh my God. Like, and so she ended up being like a little ribbon skirt fairy. And she came and she collected this bag of materials that I'd put together and sewed it into this beautiful skirt for Summer and brought it back. And yeah, I think that was just like kind of some of the relationship building paying off. Like she was willing to do that because, you know, some of the ways I supported her. But shortly after that, I'd reached out to Noella Steinhauer and asked her, you know, if she'd be willing to teach me and some of the other ATEP students how to sew. And she very graciously said yes. And so we spent some time with her and that's who I made my first skirt with. And I think in that same month was when I started this class with Dwayne. And we were doing the 13 moons. So we gathered every moon for a year. And as part of the class, you're asked to create a winter count. And so here's me who just made my first skirt. And I was like, yeah, skirts would be a great winter count. Like, who does that? Like, I just learned and I'm like jumping ahead of myself. But it ended up being a really good activity for myself to kind of slow down. And slow down and sew, but also slow down and attend to people's stories. And so I think the beauty of that class is that, you know, we're all getting the same teachings and the same experiences, but our experience with that information and with those interactions is so different. And so there's some people that really like their focus is more on place. And there's people whose focus is more on, you know, like, you know, their children or however they take that up, right? There's just different opportunities for people based on their lived experiences. And so for me, it was really about trying to be present and listen to the stories of people around me and attend to those relationships in a meaningful way. Because I often have so many like things on the go, I feel like sometimes I'm not, you know, as engaged as I should be. I'm a little bit distracted or trying to get to the next thing. And so this class really helped me just to like take that step back and embrace that time with the people I'm with. And yeah, it was just kind of transformative in that way. And again, my gratitude to Indigenous scholars, because I think that like that's where, again, that community is cultivated, as well as in courses like that, where you see things being done differently and live differently, and giving me hope more than anything else. But yeah, so that was how the 13 skirts kind of came to fruition. I still have. Our class ended in April, but we're meeting on November 18th. So that's like my firm deadline, is like I have to try and get everything done. I mean, even that I'm okay with. I know it's kind of become a little bit of a joke for me about how slow I got too slow. But I think it's been, you know, reflective for me in how I'm like attending to my own body. Like I don't like sewing when I'm angry or stressed or overwhelmed, because then I'm making mistakes and I'm putting that in energy into something I'm creating for someone else. And so, yeah, I probably didn't sew for a good 2 or 3 months. And the first skirt I made was my cousin just passed. And so I made a skirt for her funeral. And yeah, that's like the first time I touched a sewing machine in a while. So I actually, but it was good because I feel like she was kind of guiding me back to that space and reminding me of the possibility there of creating things for other people. So yeah. 15 minutes in and I might cry. That's longer than I probably thought I was going to last. So
I'm going to keep on that thread of seeds of possibility. And you added also the seeds of hope in that. And just acknowledging, you know, as I'm hearing you acknowledge the scholars that have supported you and walked with you, it's like, oh, kind and compassionate humans will find one another. So I just want to acknowledge that within you also, as I'm listening to you speak and as I'm listening to you share about gifting skirts and the intention that you're putting in them and the meditation and the prayer and the thoughtfulness and how it's like bringing this whole new thinking. You're helping me rethink more deeply about skirt making. And my own first time I made my own skirt, I was like, oh my God. So I just took the 2 meters and I wrapped it around me. And I said to the women who were giving the teachings and helping me sew, because I had never sewed, I said, this will do. No, I can't go any further. This is work. I'm happy with this. Doesn't it look good? So I was convincing myself that would be good enough, just to have the fabric wrapped around me and I would just roll it and I would fashionize it and, you know, no one would know. But of course, you know, when we have those beautiful humans around us, and in my case, it was my cousin, my Métis cousin, my sisters, and we gathered a whole community of women to learn how to do our skirts in preparation for walking with our sisters, honoring missing and murdered Indigenous women. And I'm still, you know, as you are reflecting on that process, right? What it means when we take that up and make our skirts and how we use that creative work to bring forth new possibilities and thinking and love, you know, within our own lives. And so I did get much help to sew my skirts. And there was just something so powerful about being helped as a woman, especially when we're, you know, like you said, busy and giving and serving others, to receive that support. And I'm not even sure support is that word or the right word, but that kind of care, you know, that kind of care of being tended to with how to use a sewing machine and where to imagine the ribbons and making it our own expression of our own self. And so you got me thinking also about this winter count. I've never heard that expression. And so as you're preparing these 13 moons, so I'm imagining the 13 moon skirts, the 13 skirts are tied to the 13 moons. And how is that linked to the winter cow? Can you help me expand my creative thinking here? And also, my goodness, what a good idea for course assignments, Kyle, as you're grading and as we're both instructing, to think of creative ways to have assignments, right, that express our creativity. So yeah, winter count as it relates to your skirts and the 13 moons. I'm sure it's interconnected in some way.
Yeah, so the throughout this process, Dwayne had asked us to however we felt best suited us, to find a way to represent the moons. And to like, we ended up sharing our winter counts with each other. So for some people it was, you know, beating, or like other people had like paintings, or I'm trying to think what else there was. My mind is going blank. There was a lot of beating. But even in that, it was like how it was taken up was in different ways, and like seeing what people came up with. I think somebody had a cake. I can't remember if that was for the winter count or for another assignment, but there was just like kind of this diversity in representation that was like really cool to see, because again, like that's just how they process that information. And so for me, what I ended up doing was I took, you know, Bob has his, you know, sacred circle with the four colors. And so as kind of a nod to him, that's kind of what the colors I chose to follow. So there's, you know, the three skirts in the spring, the three skirts in the summer, three skirts in the fall, three skirts in the winter. And so the colors of the skirts, the fabrics of the skirts corresponded with those colors. And then the 13th skirt was the one I made for myself. And so I ended up taking a little piece of fabric from each of those other skirts and putting it on there and making like a little woman. And so to me, that was just kind of the visual reminder of carrying those humans and those stories and those memories of that year with myself. But yeah, when I look at like each of those skirts, like it just kind of does jog to me like what was happening at that time. And that's really the intention of the assignment, I think, is kind of that history keeping, record keeping component. And, you know, what, like a lot of nations would have done that in different ways, but thinking of, you know, how we want to take it up in our own worlds. And so, yeah, I landed on the skirts, but it's amazing what I always think, oh, I'm going to forget what happened. And then as soon as I look at the fabric, or I think of the person who it was for, and it like comes back to me like, oh, that was during, you know, Goose Moon, and that this is what was happening, and this is why I chose those ribbon colors. And I remember them talking about this story with their kids, or, you know, we were in this place and that's why I wanted, and they've been alongside, and so supportive of other women. And so that's why I, you know, had this illustration on there, or this, just the different parts of the skirt. So, yeah, I really liked that assignment. It's helped me with my memory more than I thought it would. I thought the time would pass and I would, you know, forget everything that was going on, and I haven't. And so, yeah, I think even just putting your hands into that work for me has just helped kind of seal that into my memory forever. Is and all those people are like part of me now, right? Like how I think and how I engage with information. And so I'm really grateful to everyone in that class, particularly the women, but just because there's more of us.
Yes.
But also the others.
It's like, how interesting of a concept when you think about count and storying, and all the way images or expressions can be used. And it kind of interrupts for me. I'm like, oh, I'm so used to just having writing as a mechanism of the tracking system, right? Field notes, writing, thoughts. And it's like, you're just making me, think more deeply about ways in which the count is a way in which it's helping you story, but remember, like how somehow the brain is able to remember the stories and those humans that you're storying together Isn't that cool, Kyle? As a way of, as an assignment to think about record keeping in that sense, like a traditional form of knowledge making and record keeping. So generous. It is so generous to think about a traditional form of making knowledge. I love it. It's beautiful.
And the winter count moves beyond a linear way of thinking into a linear way of understanding time into this overlapping understanding, and bringing it back to Megan, your understanding of even relationships and let's say the relationships, the overlap of your time with UAlberta. Tell me more about the role of community, the role of academic aunties, the role of academic uncles, and what this has meant for you. Because, you know, similar to you, you know, I've found a sense of community on campus with UAlberta, and you know, chose to take, you know, as with you, you're moving from your master's education to your PhD. What has community looked like for you at your time here, or how has this evolved and changed over time?
First of all, I feel like I could talk about this forever. So I'm mindful of time. And Dwayne always is like, your problem is you want to honor everyone. And I was like, but how do I not do that? But I think there are like a couple key moments that I like kind of think of often, and people who are friends with me that might listen to this might be like, oh, Megan, we've heard these stories so many times. But like, I really do give credit to other people for my presence here, because I think after my first semester, I was probably ready to quit because I was like just so angry at the institution. And so the first interaction, I mean, and arguably the most important ones have been with Dwayne, because he has been so patient with me. And so even in those moments where I felt ready to quit, and I went into like, I'm learning, you know, I'm getting better, but I retreat. When I'm frustrated or when I'm like overwhelmed. And so I just stopped responding to him, which is like, you know, don't do that. Anybody who's listening, don't do that to your supervisor. But yeah, the class, I was with him in a class and there was this final paper, and I just was having a really difficult time with it because I was writing about, you know, my family and my grandma and policy and, you know, historic implications and all of this, like picking at a scab, you know, like the scab that you think you've forgotten about, and then all of a sudden it just picked right off and it's fresh again. And so I just couldn't finish this paper, and Dwayne kept texting me and messaging me, and he said something like, I'm just gonna keep messaging you so that you know I haven't forgotten about you. And I remember thinking, like, I don't deserve this man's kindness. And then eventually I got a text from Evelyn Steinhauer, who was my boss at the time. And I remember reading the text message and being like, shit, I just got auntied. And my husband, and this was like, I think at the end of Christmas break, so like right before we were coming back in January, and he's like, what do you mean? And I said, read this. And so she'd sent me a text message, just kind of like a welfare check off. And he's like, oh yeah. I was like, I think Dwayne told her to, you know, reach out to me. But it worked. Like, that's what kind of was the kick in the pants. And when we came back to campus, you know, I remember she called me into her office and we had a good conversation, and she said, you know, you can't do that. Like, you know, it was like the, like, she gave me a little bit of a stern auntie talk, but it wasn't mean or harsh. It was just like, I want you to do well, and this is, you know, this is what you need to do. And so that, between Dwayne and Evelyn, I really appreciate it. You know, I've relied on both of them a lot. And then somehow the uncles always seem to lead me to the aunties, because I took a class with Sean Lessard and I was asking him all these questions about research methodologies and narrative inquiry and all this stuff. And I think he eventually said, you need to talk to Trudy. And so I just happened to run into Trudy. She came into the ATEP kitchen one day and I said, hey, I need to talk to you. And she's like, okay, about what? And that was our first interaction in person. And, you know, we've been like inseparable ever since. And so, yeah, like she's been also a huge support. I think people have also asked me good questions like, you know, what does make you hopeful or what does love look like for you? In the academy, and you know, how can you live Sagittawin and all of these different pieces. The other person who I haven't really mentioned and I would like to is Roxanne Titusis, and there's a very specific reason for that. I actually never met Roxanne when she was in the physical world, and I remember I was driving one day with a couple of people and we were talking about cricket, like the crafting machine. And we're talking about like applique and stuff like that. And somebody in the car was like, oh, Roxanne would have loved you. And, you know, I hope that is true. But I also, I just like have reflected on that a couple times and thought like, I truly think I wasn't meant to meet her. I was meant to meet so many of the people that she deeply impacted. And that has been the case is like, you know, like Noella and Patsy, but also like ATEP students who she influenced to take on leadership roles with, you know, language revitalization efforts or, you know, randomly going medicine picking and like meeting someone who was her helper, or Carla Badger, who also, you know, like I've sewed alongside her for a number of occasions and has been like a huge support and friend. Terry Cardinal. And so all these people who just kind of reminded me of the impact of Roxanne. And for me, it's been a really good reminder of kind of the impact of my own actions intergenerationally. And thinking about those reverberations and how, you know, my responsibility to them. And so, yeah, so I'm really grateful to all of those people who, you know, carry Roxanne, like I said, carrying those stories, carrying Roxanne with them and the work that they do and sharing that with so many people. And so obviously I have a lot of gratitude for Roxanne, even though our paths never crossed here on Earth. But she is someone who's like influenced my thinking a lot. And yeah, and then now Cindy got looped into the anti thing. And I think that's, you know, when I started my PhD or I was thinking about continuing with the PhD, Dwayne said, I think you need a co-supervisor. And I said, are you breaking up with me? Are you trying to get rid of me? And like joking, but he said, no, I think you need a woman's presence is like some of the ideas that you're sitting with, like, I'll still support you. And he's like, what about Cindy? And then I was funny because I think the day before that I just had like a really nice conversation with Cindy on the couch and shared a bunch of ideas with her. And I was like, yeah, of course, Cindy, like that makes so much sense. So, yeah, so I'm just grateful for like the community of humans who have made like illuminated the path for me, I guess, but also reminded me of my responsibility to continue to do that work for others. And building that community for Indigenous students beyond just myself. So I try to do that as much as I can. And I also think like, you know, working alongside the ATEP students was so impactful in that way and like making me a more compassionate, thoughtful human alongside them and their unique situations and just wanting to love and support them to be successful in whatever they decide to do. So, yeah. Sorry, that was a long answer.
Oh, it's a big question as you reflected on it. You know, and as you talk about, right, the academic aunties, the university uncles, the campus cousins, the family far and wide here, you just remind me of the importance of really that connectivity, that ensuring that you don't feel so alone, particularly as, right, Indigenous staff, as Indigenous students, right? You're weaving between the two of these right now. So I'm curious, you know, thinking about those that maybe were in your shoes or in your position, if you could, like, just some closing thoughts here, if you could offer any advice, let's say to your earlier self, before in that rush and in the application, when you, like you said, you did it all wrong and you still got in that place of unknowing, what is that piece of advice that you wish you would have heard when you first started your program? Let me rephrase here. In terms of closing thoughts here, what would be a piece of advice that you wish that you would have heard when you first joined the campus community here?
There's a million things I would have done differently and would give advice to my past self, but I think the two is, like, one, don't be afraid to ask for help. I think when you, for me, I still am unlearning that habit of, like, just forcing my way through everything and struggling and being resistant to asking for help and feeling shameful for having to ask for help. Those are kind of like, you know, habits of unlearning that are still in process. Or when you've had experience where you've asked for help and not received it, it's really hard to ask for help again. But I do think there are, you know, people who want to support Indigenous students to be successful at the university. I guess that leads into the second thing is, like, there's nothing wrong with you if you feel angry or alone or isolated or frustrated. That's kind of the system working as intended. And so, like, where I felt inadequacy a lot of the time, I realized or have reflected on is just, you know, that I was made to feel that way systemically. And so how have I, you know, countered that? You know, we talked about through the community building and things like that. But again, like, that is where I would give a lot of, you know, kudos and appreciation to the Indigenous scholars who kind of paved that path, because without them, I don't know if I could do what they did. Like, I'm just trying to continue the work, but I don't know if I could have been the trailblazer, you know? And so there's a lot of strength there that goes unrecognized, but certainly not unappreciated. So I guess those would be my two closing pieces of advice.
Brilliant. And, you know, I've got lots of thoughts here, of course, to build on, Megan, and we could have this conversation forever, but Cindy, I might invite you to, re-edit all this. Cindy, I'd like to invite you to contribute your closing thoughts, your reflections, what thoughts are resonating with you in this conversation?
Two thoughts that I want to close with that is become evident through this conversation, which I want to say my deep gratitude for this thoughtful conversation, this generous teachings, Megan, that you've shared with us, and the inspiration of who you are, you know, and the impact that you are making. And I'm so grateful for the humans that brought us into relation, Trudy and Dwayne, and that I get to accompany you and journey you at this next phase of your PhD, and the web of relations that I'm sitting here that brought all three of us together to have this conversation, and those who walk with us in that spirit world that you again made visible, Megan, through your sharing and through your own experience. So I want to acknowledge the multi-layers of the web of relations that we're with. And so I'm just grateful to both of you for today and this time together. Hi, hi, and merci.
Respond.
Seems like a nice natural cut.
Yeah.